The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
You're in the madhouse now.
They were the heroes from the future. Teenagers protecting the universe from those that would sow the seeds of chaos. Each had unique powers and abilities. And though they often had their differences, they came together to save the day as the Legion of Superheroes. Now, you can be a part of their adventures and learn the history of the future in the Legion Clubhouse.
This week on the Legion Clubhouse, we are headed to the planet Durla, a place where no one has ever gone before.
Legion of Superheroes number 301. Different paths, different dooms. Published July 1983. Written by Keith Giffen and Paul Levitz with art by Keith Giffen. Synopsis. A quest for a lost superpower goes awry, while a visitor from the past unnerves Brainiac 5.
We're looking at Legion of Superheroes number 301 this week. And R.J. Brand and his son Cam, because, you know, it's been revealed that R.J. is really a Durlan stuck into his human form. And he fathered and abandoned his child, Cam, who eventually went on to become a member of the Legion of Superheroes, and he subsequently has lost his powers to transform. So they're going back to the planet Durla to see if they can find some way of recharging his Durlan batteries.
I don't know if you'd call them Durlan batteries, but they never actually do explain. The only thing that we have is RJ talks about how radiation can mess with the Durlan shape-shifting powers. And Chameleon Boy did have a run-in with Olvir, a young Daxamite, during the battle on Tacron Galtos, 6 or 7 issues, like 294, the beginning of the Great Darkness saga.
It is really weird because that theory seems to contradict itself, right? Because the issue opens up with the planet Durla. Tragedy, 6-minute war where nuclear bombs were unleashed all over the place, right? And I'm wondering, first of all, if the 6-minute war is a reference to the 6-day war.
Almost certainly.
Okay.
I mean, I would say absolutely, because keep in mind, this is Paul Levitz.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, so that was the first thing that struck me. And then it's like, okay, so they nuked themselves. They were irradiated. And it's the radiation... Right. That caused their bodies to force into mutation.
Right.
Yet at the same time, the radiation is blocking their ability to do mutations. So that seems a little contradictory in it.
It's like, okay, so let's say you, Steven, are exposed to radiation.
Yes, I'm exposed to radiation every day. In fact, right now, as we speak, I'm being exposed to radiation.
Okay, so let's say you're exposed to enough irradiated material that your body starts malfunctioning.
Yes,
let's say
cancer.
That you have a tumor.
Yeah.
What do they use to treat that tumor?
I know, right? Isn't it weird that you got to treat it with even more stronger?
That's right.
Chemotherapy. It's like chameleon
it's
therapy.
Chemotherapy. Oh, yeah. It's another reference.
But
speaking of therapy,
yes. I got to tell you, men who are listening, it is okay to admit that you have feelings. It is okay to say that you're not okay. It is okay for men to go to therapy. Oh my gosh. There are so many daddy issues throughout this issue that Cam has not come to grips with. And at least RJ is like, yeah, I'm a son of a bitch and I abandoned you and I'm horrible, right, but I'm trying to make up for it. And Cam is like, well, it's a good thing that I'm self-aware. And then also in the very next panel, just right back into his daddy issues again. Like, it's like trying to tell somebody, you know, you've got an issue that you need to deal with. And that person is la, 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 I'm not listening the entire time.
He's smart and he is self-aware, but he's also young. And I really do like the interplay between, you know, in this case, the father and son. RJ's, I don't know if they revealed it yet, but RJ's name was Ren Daggle. Mm-hmm. And of course, Cam's is Reap Daggle.
Yeah.
So throughout this, you got that Ren Reap back and forth. But you have kind of a maturity with, because Brand doesn't give a damn. Brand is just
he's
an
rich.
Old.
He just wants to be an old rich man.
He's an old, rich, crotchety guy. And he, you know, at one point he's sitting there and he's literally just kind of pouting. And Cam is like, well, you know, you could have told me who you were. He's like, all right, all right, all right. But I really do like their interaction because, of course, when we get to the point where they're on Durla, they are sentenced to death.
Yeah, so there's some weird things going on in there. First of all, how did Cam get off Durla in order to join the Legion of Superheroes if the planet is under quarantine?
That's what I'm not sure
of. Is it a reverse quarantine? Because that's the other thing. I wasn't clear if this was a reverse quarantine, meaning that they weren't allowing, that United Planets was not allowing people from the outside to come to Durla, because they make a mention a couple of times where the two patrol guys are sitting there going, yeah, I don't understand why the Durlans don't leave. We've given them plenty of opportunities and we want to. Nobody ever comes to this planet unless they're research scientists. And so I didn't know if the quarantine was to keep people off or to keep people in.
Now, I'm sure there are people out there who will correct me on this.
Of course, and we love them all.
I believe this is the first time we've ever been on Durla.
You are correct.
And I'm almost certain that this is the first time we've really discussed Chameleon Boy, because he outright says that he joined the Legion, and I don't remember ever hearing this, to basically show people that prejudice against their people and their weird shape-shifting powers was unfair. Now, I know we've seen Cam. Mm-hmm. We've seen Chameleon Chief, who's an evil D-bag. And I want to say we saw...
Does he grow in size by saying a nunchuck?
I think we saw a Durlan science policeman a couple of issues ago.
Maybe. Oh, yeah, maybe. But, yeah.
But, and that was... To my knowledge, I think that was during the
and we've seen Durlans
with the Green Lantern.
Yeah, and we've seen the Durlans in their natural form before, so there's nothing here that's shocking. In fact, we've talked about that before, but we've never been to Durla where every 5 seconds something is evolving or shape-shifting into something else. We also know that the Durlans tend to be somewhat xenophobic, I guess, as
isolated.
Everyone else. Yeah, isolationists, yes. And
they don't trust anybody.
And certainly... I don't know if it is in this issue that then creates the Durlans as a present day menace for the DCU, because we are 6 years away or so away from invasion, five or 6 years from invasion.
Seven. Yeah. Invasion would have been 91. This book would have come out in the spring of 83. So,
yeah. And so the Durlans, the Dominators and the Coons are all, you know, these bad things. And so
and
I'm wondering
Daximites.
Yeah. And I was wondering if this is maybe where we start to see the Durlans with their isolationist xenophobic ways and really leaning into some of their belief systems a little too extreme. And of course, I try to be aware of what's going on in the modern world and seeing how that overlays into comics that we're reading and how that adapts for the times. But there's a certain country right now that has sentenced like 15,000 people to death because they're not following the law to the letter of their religious theocracy.
Yep.
And I read this issue and I see, you know, first speaker saying, "You have not followed our ways. We sentence you to death." And I'm just like, "Whoa, that's a little prescient."
Yeah. And I mean, you have to keep in mind that when this came around in, you know, 1983, if we're talking about the same country,
we are.
Yeah, they were, you know, in the news in 79-80, and there was
never left the news. So
right, there was a massive big thing about an isolationist culture in 79 and 80, leading up to, you know, the beginning of the Reagan administration. I think that that's a very smart catch. I didn't necessarily think about it, but now that you say it, I really feel like Derla is 100%.
Which is really weird because, and maybe because, you know, we're 1,000 years in the future here in the, here in our present day in the DC universe, we have Kondak and Byalaya as those equivalents of those countries today. And so I find that that the Derlans here are kind of representing that in the future seems to be something that weighs heavy on people's minds throughout time. So, and again, the thing that I tell my students all the time, study history, because those who don't study history are doomed to repeat it, because, you know,
history is always going to repeat itself
again and again and again. Time is a flat circle, and RJ Brand carries brass knuckles around with him wherever he goes.
Wouldn't you?
I mean,
the first appearance, first thing we saw of this man was him nearly being murdered and then going, you know what? I'm going to create superheroes, you guys. So you're like, you kind of feel like RJ is the kind of guy who has plans or like contingencies. He's not like Batman, I have a plan for everything. He's like, well, in a worst case scenario, I'll strangle you to death with my belt.
I
do notice something too. He keeps saying Verdammt in this issue.
Yeah, which is
I'm sitting here, I'm like, is that German or is that Yiddish?
I don't know. It may be a completely made up word as far as I know.
Well, I know that Verdammt or something close to it.
Talked about this fever before.
Right. Verdammt is something in German and is sort of something in Yiddish, which is a German sort of a Germanic language.
Yeah, it's a Germanic language. Yeah.
So are we supposed to think that RJ is speaking Yiddish, or are we supposed to think that
So Verdammt translated means damn it, for those of you who haven't figured it out. It's he suffered from the damn it fever, right?
Right. The damn it fever, but
and that's why he's stuck in this body. I don't know if they're trying to say he's German or that he's Jewish or anything like that.
I feel like Levitz may be trying to put that in there because, I mean, there's a phrase for it in Yiddish. It's the alte Kache, which is, you know, the grumpy old man or the old fart, literally. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if, you know, Levitz is leaning heavily into that for RJ and using that, you know, that language to try and emphasize to him and to anybody who kind of picks that up that, you know, this is the old guy who sits around at the barbershop and yells at Eddie Murphy.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't. I mean, it could be. It could just be, hey, here's a word that, you know, I know means something, and other people who know the words will know that it means something. But to everyone else, it sounds like a funny word. Right. It sounds like an alien word, which would go along with the damn fever that. That they've suffered from.
You just like saying that. You just like saying damn it fever.
Well, I mean, German, it's damn it. Yiddish, I just looked up. It's just, it doesn't have just, the just, it. It just has, yeah, it's damn. Just damn. Yeah. So that damn fever. So, yeah, I don't know. It could be, it really could be that. You know, there's a lot of things that are happening, and I'll talk about this when we get off planet here in a moment, but I think I want to just kind of go through the whole Cam story here.
Sure.
So he and RJ break out of their little prison bubble. They make their way to the temple, which, you know,
is very clearly some sort of scientific enclave.
Yes. But, and also for me, it reminded me very much of the Krell in Forbidden Planet. Right. So
you
come onto this planet and nobody knows, this ancient technology has just been running on the planet the entire time. And they go inside and it goes down like hundreds of levels. And that's kind of the way that they somewhat portray the temple on Derla, and that there's this beam that Cam then walks into that he gets irradiated with. And so then he gets his powers back.
Right.
But then because they've, I guess, not followed the sacred ways of the Derlans, you have to fight to the death.
Da, 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 da,
which was the first thing that I thought of, too. I was like, oh, this is very much a Vulcan, you know, fight to the death kind of thing, right? But yeah, not because you're horny, but because you're trying to kill somebody. Yeah. And so then the first speaker and Cam have to do a fight to the death, of which, on many ways, reminds me of the battle between Mad Madam Mim and Merlin in the Disney Sword in the Stone movie, right? Where they're constantly shape-shifting and turning, and eventually Merlin turns into a cold virus and takes Mim down. And in Sandman, there's that battle of the wits that Morpheus has with the demon. And he's
the
like,
rap battle in hell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. and so that's kind of what this reminded me of, because they're constantly shape-shifting. Unfortunately, according to the Encyclopedia Galactica, you're only supposed to be using the forms on Durla, but Cam does not do that. He speaks, which is not supposed to happen, and then he shapeshifts into like a hummingbird and to some other things that are not allowed, and he eventually wins.
He does a full-on homage to Bouncing Boy, too, because he's about to be crushed. He turns to liquid and then bounces away, and I'm like, yes, all those years working with Chuck have taught him something.
Yes. All those years of observing rubber bouncing balls has taught him something.
You know what? When your colleague is a rubber bouncing ball, I feel like you can say your colleague. It would have been cooler to me if he had done, you know, more than one member of the Legion, but I still feel like it's interesting. And he turns into a weird little eel monkey, which is kind of nice.
Yeah. Also, first speaker turns into an alien chest burster.
Yes.
Which I thought was kind of spooky and creepy and kind
full
of
on H.R. Giger kind of thing. And I'm like, wait. What?
I was kind of waiting for maybe like one of the crazy aliens from The Thing, you know, when like the dog, when they go into kill the dogs and they're just those whole, you know, snake whipping things. I was expecting
that. Well, and Giffen does really good alien-y aliens. There's actually, there's some stuff that happens off Durla where two aliens are having a discussion on like Weber's world and talking about who's on. And neither of them are even vaguely humanoid.
Right.
There are these two weird guys. One looks kind of like his head is a can opener, and the other one is like a praying mantis man. And it's just this, you know, little bit of background noise story, something that you need in there to keep your continuity going.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that could have been just two human dudes, but instead it's two really, you know, alien guys. And I appreciate that.
Yeah. And that's
Giffen goes to that level more than previous artists have.
Well, and we've seen that more since Levitz took over, right? We've seen that more of, and I don't know if it's just Giffen being added in here or if Levitz is making an effort to say, hey, you know, these really need to look like aliens from, you know, we're dealing with aliens from across the quote unquote galaxy. And so not everybody needs to be a human. So make that guy a can opener, make that guy a talking parrot, and let's move on with the story. So eventually Cam defeats first speaker. And so second speaker, I guess, becomes first speaker, but they are allowed to get off the planet thanks to the help of some of the Legion of Superheroes who show up to help out.
I think first speaker says, I am first speaker. And second speaker says, you are first speaker.
Yes.
Or maybe I'm thinking of first person and second person. Yes. Nonetheless, Cam gets to go back home.
Yeah, and even RJ goes with him. And so we think that all their issues have been resolved, question mark, maybe not.
They kind of have, but it is sweet, you know, to see RJ tearing up at the thought that his boy might die. And when they get to the power machine, Cam's like, great, Dad, we can get our powers back and we can go off and have adventures. And RJ's like, nope, don't want powers.
Yeah, he goes, I am happy in this body. I've been in this body for so long that I'm used to it. And anything else would seem strange to him. Plus, I just want to spend my money and be fat and happy. And it's like, okay.
And by God, I'm like, yes, sir, I'm with you. We're just going to sit and sit on a pile of money and get fatter and fatter and fatter.
So
maybe we'll buy 50th century Twitter.
Yes. So there are some other things that are going on in this issue that I find interesting. First of all, the teams are being scattered all across the place so that they can go on different missions. And we also get introduced to another, and I didn't write her name down.
Gigi Simano.
Yeah, from the Science Police. She's the roommate of Siobhan Aaron. And, you know, they're in there talking to Jan. And then, of course, Sun Boy walks in and has to be a complete cat. He's like, well, hello, ladies.
Yeah. Gigi does recur, and Sun Boy's interest in her recurs as well. So.
I'm sure. She's a single female, and he's in the room. So, of course.
Now, of course.
But here's the thing that's really interesting. So Gigi and Sun Boy go off to get a tour or something. And then Jan and Siobhan are kind of left alone, and there's an implication that she's trying to hit on him a little bit, and he totally just is like, he's not oblivious, but he is making a very definite, I'm not interested kind of play towards her.
He's definitely deflecting, yeah.
Right, which, for those of you who haven't figured it out by now, Jan is gay.
Yeah.
I think that this panel in this issue is, if anybody had any question about it, this is the point where you're like, oh no, Jan is gay, which in 1983 is a big deal.
Yeah.
But
and the fans have been saying that Jan is gay since the early 70s.
So yes, you know? So this goes back even further because fans had been questioning Jan's sexual orientation since I want to say since he first appeared. And because he never had any real interest in teaming up with any, you know, I say teaming up, hooking up with any of the other girls. I was reading an article where apparently this was brought up at a comic book convention in 1976 during a panel discussion where one of the audience members asked if Jan was gay, and DC just totally avoided it, moved on to another question and played it off. And it wasn't until Levitt started to come on board that we start to see Jan's sexual orientation start to become more to the forefront. Not in 1983, they haven't said that Jan is gay. We're going to wait another couple of years before DC is brave enough. I guess brave is the word that we would use to come out and say this. And it's going to be even a few more years before we find out what really is going on with Siobhan and Aaron. Yeah, because that one's also very interesting. And I don't know if, and when we can have that conversation when we get there. I don't know if that was something that was decided upon retroactively or if that was decided from the very first moment that Siobhan entered the scene. But
I want to say, and again, I believe I'm like 80% certain that reveal is a Giffen, or at least a Giffen co-written reveal. It's not as far off as you might think. We'll probably get to that.
Well, I know it's in the 2024. Well, that's what I'm saying. I think it's a 5-year later story when that comes out.
So it's going to be somewhere in the 30s, probably Legion Volume 4, Number 30 or 31.
Yeah. So we're coming up on it. But you know, is it one of those things that? Oh, yes, let's do this. And in hindsight, it will make all sense. Or, hey, here's Siobhan Aaron. We already know Element Lads is gay. So we're going to introduce this character. And then we're also going to reveal this at a later time when it's appropriate. Because I think that really, really changes their dynamic quite a bit and makes it make sense and still makes it kind of work out in the end. For everybody who's an Aaron Element Lad shipper. It still kind of works. Well, I mean, it doesn't really work out in the end, spoiler alert.
The whole universe dies about 12 minutes later. So, I mean, it's not like they didn't make a go of it.
Right. But. Right. Also in this issue, if you haven't figured out that Brainiac 5 is asexual or at least, what is it?
Demisexual.
There's a different specific word for it, but let me see if I can find it because I did write it down. It's demisexual is I guess what I wrote down. I thought there was something else in there where he's more than willing to take on a romantic interest with Supergirl, but the first thing he had to do was have a mental or social
an emotional
connection to her before he has any kind of a sexual connection, because Supergirl is still sticking around in this issue. And we start to see a little bit more interaction between those two and him being a little weirded and maybe taken aback by the fact that that Supergirl is maybe, I don't want to say she's hitting on him, but she is trying to be a little closer than he's maybe willing to be at this moment.
She has always been into Brainiac, though. Even if you go back to Brainiac's very first appearance, is a story where Supergirl is joining the Legion or wanting to join the Legion, and something happens. I think Red Kryptonite makes her an adult and she can't join, but Brainiac can.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, she had a romantic interest in Brainiac, and he showed a little bit of, you know, a little bit of back and forth with her. But I can't remember there ever being another romance for Brainy in the, at this point, 20, 25 years in between. So
no, I think,
it may be one of those, you know, kind of a, he's definitely, I would say, on the asexual spectrum. And it may be one of those sort of a single target sexuality thing where if it's Supergirl, he's interested.
Yes. He's super sexual. And, he's only interested in Supergirl.
Supergirl.
Yes. Right. And that's the only one, which
maybe
is fine. I mean, there's nothing.
The one who broke the rules to let her join the Legion because she doesn't have a unique power to her cousin.
Right. Except that she's a woman, right?
That's true. I mean, female, I don't know if you female, the female, you know, body, is it a separate superpower? Yeah, I'm not going to opine.
Yeah. No. So what the reason why I'm bringing this up, and everybody's sexual orientation is perfectly good. Fine. To me, it doesn't bother me what your sexual orientation is. If you're happy, I'm happy. And as long as you're engaging in stuff that everyone else is consensual and it's not predatory or abusive in nature, I'm totally fine with it. The reason why I wanted to bring it up now is because I think that this issue really puts those two characters, Element Lad and Brainiac 5, kind of in just one panel each, makes it very apparent that they are not what we would typically consider heterosexual orientations. And then on top of that, the fact that it is 1983 and the fact that we are already going through a lot of stuff in America at that time with AIDS epidemic is starting to be a big thing. There is a bigger push for gay rights. And we're seeing, I don't remember what year Stonewall was. I know it's probably like 4 or 5 years before this, I want to say. We have a lot of that. Oh, I'm sorry, 69. So I'm way off.
I thought it was 69. Yeah.
Some reason I thought it was 79. We're seeing a lot of that kind of get moved into this idea that, and which I like about the Legion of Superheroes, is that if they are going to be all inclusive, it shouldn't just matter whether you're a boy or a girl or whether you've got a green skin or white skin or orange skin, but also all sexual orientations are welcome as well. And I think that even though DC is not willing to step forward and say, hey, we've got some gay characters here or people that are ace, at least it's there for those who are in the know, I guess I want to say.
Yeah.
And I think that that's kind of cool.
It's subtextual, but it's a more obvious subtext than, you know, a lot of Bronze Age comics. And that's kind of the thing. I feel like they talk about moving that Overton window of, as you have these things come in and as more and more references come to it, it becomes more and more normalized, which then moves, you know, that normal. I feel like this is something where, no, Levitz either isn't going to or can't yet come out and say, we're writing this character as a gay man. But they can definitely make it part of the story, and they can make it there for the people that want to pick it up. And I feel like, on the one hand, it is kind of frustrating that it is all subtext, but it's also one of those things where if it was textual, I mean, even, you know, in the year 2022, we're 40 years down the line from this issue, and we still have people going, well, what's the reason for this character? I need a story-related reason for this character to even exist. I'm like, shut up. How about that? There's your reason. Shut up.
I just did a really quick search, and so I wonder, we know that Jan is gay, but he is, and I guess we have to wait until he comes out before we can retroactively say he's one of DC's first gay characters, because Wikipedia still lists Extraño as DC's first character in gay character in 1988. So I wonder
Extraño if is the first openly gay character. And I think that that's part of it, you know?
Okay.
Okay, let's assume that we're going to treat these as real people.
Right.
If we take these characters at their word, until Jan comes out and says in 1991, I think, comes out and says, no, I'm actually gay, Siobhan. When he says that, I think at that point, you've officially had that moment of, okay, Jan said it. He has come out. You know, you can now say Jan is a gay character. And I feel like Jan's, you know, if again, you're treating him as a real people, but anybody's point where they say, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. That's the point where you go, okay, before that, it feels almost creepy to like kind of speculate or you know try and say, hey, what if? But yeah, I would definitely say that Jan's influence on Extraño is there, but mm-hmm. it's also vice versa, because once what is his name, Diego, once Extraño shows up and once they have this character who is admittedly gay, mm-hmm. very flamboyant, you know, very camp gay, very over the top a lot of ways, but mm-hmm. you know, just kind of a character who is absolutely, yes, this is, I am a gay character. That, I think, is the point where it's not but 2 years later before, you know, Giffen writes the story where Jan is like, yes, I'm gay. So I kind of feel like it's that moment of, yeah.
Yeah,
that window has moved and people are like, well, isn't Element Lad also somebody that, you know, seems to, that we think is gay? And at that point, they're like, we're going to write this story because, hey, Tasmanian Devil is out and Extraño is out. And you've got the characters who said these things and nobody burst into flame. So DC, you know, editorial can go like, oh, okay.
Yeah. That goes back into, was that the intention when the character was created, or was that something that was just like, oh, people keep assuming this, you know, 10 years down the line. So we're going to say that, yes, retroactively, you were all correct. That's the part where it's, again, we're dealing with fictional characters. So it's not I was born this way, or I didn't realize this until this moment, or whatever kind of situations. But I still think that it's really kind of cool that, you know, a future comic is subtly letting people who are aware know that, yes, these characters exist. And mm-hmm. in a sense, we recognize you as well, meaning the reader who fall on the LGBTQAI spectrum. And I think that's cool. That's all the reason why I wanted to talk about that. And I know a lot of people get very upset about these kind of topics, but I mean, come on, it is the year 2022 and we should all be a little bit better than that. But there we go. The only other thing that happened in this issue is Karate Kid and Princess Projector are getting married. I thought they already but whatever.
No, he had to fight for his right to party. No, he had to fight to win her hand. And then they had the engagement announcement. And Voxiv was killed. And so what you're probably thinking of is the point where Projectra became the queen.
Yeah.
5 or 6 issues ago. And now we're going to have, I think, in a couple of issues, Legion Annual #2 is a big,
big wedding.
Gosh,
issue.
Is that thing? Yeah. Big wedding issue. I'm trying to remember. I'm like, oh yeah, I don't remember. Boy, I hope I didn't skip it. I didn't skip.
No,
it.
No, this is,
it's going to be in episode 133.
Yeah. Whatever gods there be. So we'll get to that a couple episodes from now. So just hang tight.
DC Comics presents #59, Ambush Bug 2, or Just When You Thought It Was Safe to Read DC Comics Presents Again. Published July 1983. Written by Keith Giffen and Paul Levitz, with art by Keith Giffen and Kurt Schaffenberger. Synopsis: behold, the ambush bug!
Okay, so piggybacking off of a very in-depth, just go see your therapist kind of issue, we get into an ambush bug issue in DC Comics Presents #59. And it's like, how does this tie into Legion of Superheroes? Well, it's because we get the Legion of Substitute Heroes in this one.
That's right. DC Comics Presents was basically a counterpart to Batman in Batman Brave and the Bold.
Right.
But instead of teaming up with Batman, everyone in DCP, or as I like to call it, DC Comics Presents, would team up with Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And so previously, there was a Doom Patrol story that had a throwaway villain called the Ambush Bug. And Ambush Bug was crazy, but he was like, I shouldn't say that. Ambush Bug was definitely mentally ill, but he was mentally ill in that first appearance in a way that was kind of...
Yeah, but no, if you're saying Doom Patrol, that's not his first appearance. His actual first appearance was in DC Comics Presents number 52 from December of 1982. Yeah, oh, Superman and the Doom Patrol. Okay, I thought you said it was a Doom Patrol issue. But
a Doom Patrol crossover issue of this comic.
Okay. I gotcha.
Yeah.
And so the character was so, the audiences liked him so much that Julia Schwartz was just like, Giffen, get another story out as quickly as you can. So this is really the only second appearance of Ambush Bug before he would go on to be kind of a recurring character. I say recurring, I mean like maybe once every 4 years, kind of recurring character in the Superman comics.
He was a big deal in 82. Ambush Bug was the new hotness for a very brief time right before the Crisis on Infinite Earths. And that first Ambush Bug limited series just flew off the stands. And the thing I think that probably shot it in the foot was Ambush Bug and his, you know, ascension to fame came at the same time that Keith Giffen got obsessed with the art of Jose Munoz and changed his entire art style, which is not too far off. So get ready, Legion fans. You're going to hear us going, woo-hoo-hoo.
Yeah. Ambush Bug. I know Ambush Bug. Yeah. You know Ambush Bug. Most of our listeners, I assume, know Ambush Bug.
Mm-hmm.
Save for an appearance on Batman Brave and the Bold, where he was played by Henry Winkler, brilliantly.
Right.
If
are modern
Ambush,
people going to know?
does the modern comic book reader or even casual fan know who Ambush Bug is? Or if Ambush Bug suddenly popped up in an upcoming, new person in charge of the DC film studios suddenly decided, hey, I'm going to put Ambush Bug in an upcoming movie, how many people would just say, oh, Ambush Bug, he's just ripping off Deadpool?
A lot of people would say that because the bug was Deadpool before Deadpool was Deadpool.
Right. I mean, I know that. But I think that a lot of people would look at that and go, oh, this is just a Deadpool ripoff. Why can't DC ever do anything original? And it's like, hey, man. Have you ever looked at timelines and looked and seen when Deadpool came out? I think Rob Liefeld was probably just a teenager at this point.
Rob Liefeld was busy ripping off Deathstroke.
But
Rob Liefeld, I think, is our age. So yeah.
He's a year younger than we are. I have to double check.
Please tell me you're kidding.
Let me look really quick because I was really surprised the other day. No, he's 2 years old. He's 55. He was born in 67. For some reason, I thought that there's somebody that I thought was at Image. How old is Jim Lee? Jim Lee's got to be. Because there's somebody at Image who is younger than we are. He's 58. So he's older too. Well, how old is Todd McFarlane?
Mark Silvestri? McFarlane is definitely older than us.
Okay, so let's look up Mark Silvestri. And so everybody who's listening is like, well, wait a minute, how old are you guys? Well, we're old enough to know that Ambush Bug came out before. No, right. He's 64.
Oh, holy moly.
Yeah, wow, he is old.
Okay, so who were the other? Let's see, there were seven. There was Wills
Portacio.
Portacio.
And
Jim Valentino.
Yeah, and Jim Valentino is way older than. So I guess for some reason I thought Rob Liefeld was a year younger than we are. So anyway, doesn't really make any difference going back to who ripped off who. At the same time, we can go back and look at Ambush Bug, and Giffen and Levitz do not pull any punches in this issue to let you know that this is a Looney Tunes episode, and Ambush Bug is wonderful. No, it is. It's very good, but it's also very important to know that Giffen was like, I want to make Ambush Bug the evil version of Bugs Bunny. And Bugs Bunny's already pretty chaotic evil, as far as characters go. So to make Ambush Bug an evil version of Bugs Bunny, I find very hilarious.
It kind of is. And this is also very important because this is the moment you can hear it. You can hear it happen. This is the point where the Legion of Substitute Heroes is no longer taken seriously for the better part of a decade.
Well, I would
just
say even today.
This story.
Porcupine Pete. The
impact of this story. I mean, they were always silly. But the impact of the story took them from, you know, Polar Boy was a plucky outsider who wasn't quite good enough and, you know, built his own thing until now. From this point forward, they're goobers.
Yeah, no, I mean, and you don't have to look any further than the recurring. And I forget who's trying to get Stone Boy out of the ground, but
Chlorophyll Kid and Fire Lad.
Yes. And it's just like, how are we going to pull him out? And it's just.
We could use a crane. Now we rip his head off.
It's so funny. And really, this issue is there's not really a story except that Superman and the Legion of Substitute Heroes have to capture Ambush Bug to bring him back to the present and also to prevent Ambush Bug from discovering Superman's secret identity, which there's a beautiful moment where Ambush Bug smashes into a Clark Kent Superman bust. And he just is too busy, too preoccupied fighting the Legion of Substitute Heroes and Superman to notice it. And it's just like, oh, this is perfect.
Yes, he's not there. And that's the best part is he's so hyper focused on just annoying Superman that he misses these really important things. And that's actually how they defeat him. He misses the fact that the Phantom Zone projector is behind a wall with a button that says do not push.
Yeah.
In English, by
and
the
he's
way.
Like, he's like, I'm going to push it. If I do, I get in trouble. I do it.
I do it. Yeah.
Oh, I'm but such a stinker.
It is. I mean, honestly, this is the first time I read Ambush Bug. This is one of my favorite comics of all time. Even though I don't like what it does to the Legion of Subs, even though
it's filled with
interlack that makes it hard to read. And I'm like, I used to be able to read interlack. Now I can't. But it's just, it's one of those issues that changes everything. I mean, it comes in and just goes whoop, 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 whoop. And all of a sudden, Ambush Bug is a thing and the Legion is a completely different thing. Just,
well, beautiful. So if you've got to tell a story in the future with the Legion of Superheroes and instead you're substituting the substitutes, I think that's a good idea because if you had taken the Legion and replace them in these parts, so you have Wildfire instead of Flame Boy, you know, doing that kind of stuff. It really, I think, would have made a lot of fans angry in the way that the Legion would have been treated with disrespect. When it's the substitutes, and you've already got Porcupine Pete, and you've already got Stone Boy.
And don't forget Infectious Lass.
And Infectious Lass, because Porcupine Pete and Infectious Lass are going on a date with one another.
Sure.
I think it is great, and I'd have to go back and read some of the future letters columns, but I do not think that I think it's very accepted to throw the substitutes under the bus and make them a joke.
And it also introduces the Legion of Substitute Heroes Auxiliary.
Yes.
Those heroes who are not yet ready.
Was it Rainbow? What was the who was it?
Antennae Lad. From like Adventure Comics 305,
yeah,
a double header from Adventure 323, neither of whom have appeared since like 1964,
right?
And Color Kid is an official sub.
Oh, he is at this point. I thought he was one of the ones in training that they were still training him up to be a substitute member.
Oh, maybe he is. Now that I see this, it looks like Color Kid. I'm trying to remember if Color Kid has been a sub before this. I don't know. In any case, Color Kid attacks him with the full force of his powers, and Ambush Bug goes, "Ooh, Technicolor!"
Yeah, I mean it's feels like a Mad Magazine, right? Where it's just a series of comical vignettes strung together with a very loose story. And so, you like some Warner Brothers slapstick stuff, and you want to see what happens that doesn't involve Batmite, then DC Presents number 59, I think, gives you that wacky Looney Tunes stuff inside of DC Comics. The only other thing that I would suggest is there was a couple of years ago, DC did a Looney Tunes DC crossover thing, even though they're all owned by the same company, where had like Tasmanian
Road
Devil,
and the Flash.
Yeah, Roadrunner and the Flash, and I forget who Tasmanian did, but there was a great
Lobo.
Oh yes, there was a great Elmer Fudd Batman story that to this day still strikes in my mind. This whole kind of Sin City vibe going on with that issue, and so this kind of this issue feels like that. So if you want to see some slapsticky stuff and Superman still being the straight man in all of this, then this is a really good comic to read. The other thing that should be pointed out is that they intentionally drew Superman in the style of his first appearances by Simon Schuster. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that is Kurt Schaffenberger who handles the inks on this, but Giffen.
Yeah,
Giffen does breakdowns, and then Kurt Schaffenberger, who is a classic old school artist at DC, drew Superboy, Supergirl. For a while, I think he was drawing Superman Family. But yeah, Schaffenberger intentionally does some really, really wonderful Joe Schuster riffs. There's a sequence where Superman is literally leaping across the skyline like a Schuster drawing, mm-hmm. and I'm like, I haven't seen that in years.
I'd have to go back and look at the first pages. I thought somewhere they said that this is Superman is being drawn in the style of his first appearance, you know, because he's got the squinty
dedicated
eyes.
Dedicated to premier Superman artist Joe Schuster is on the splash page.
Yeah, so that's why I thought that's why they were intentionally drawing it to look like that. The only mm-hmm. thing that's missing would have been a black shield, would have been nice to put in there as that final kind of, touch in that. But This is silly. It's goofy. I laughed at some of it. I rolled my eyes. It is definitely 1983 humor aimed at 10-year-olds.
This is a great comic.
Yeah.
This is a wonderful comic. And honestly, you know, there are some books that you look at it and you go, this is something that I love because it came out when I was 12. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not true here. I was 13 and a half. But more importantly,
in July of 83.
Don't let people know that. Then they'll be like, you're undermining my whole point. But here's the thing. This launched a very short-lived, sadly, but huge comic book phenomenon at a point where that kind of didn't happen. And you know, today we talk about going viral. Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways, Ambush Bug is one of those rare moments where a comic character kind of went viral. People went nuts. He got his own miniseries. He got a slot in Action Comics. Mm-hmm. So he appeared like every other issue of Action Comics somewhere around the 580s. And it was a big deal. And then it kind of all came to a crashing halt. Giffen. But you know, He was in the Suicide Squad for a second, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
He was in the Doom Patrol for a minute.
You know, thumbs up. It's something to go chase down. And I know that there is an electronic version that you can get through the Comixology app, and you can go check it out for yourself. That wraps it up for this installment of the Legion Clubhouse. Matthew, what did we learn this week?
We learned that you don't go back to Durla because Durla is a Gefichtenscheid machinen.
I think you also learned this week that you got to zap all the bugs.
That's right. And more importantly, if Supergirl shows up, does it make a sound?
Thank you so much, everybody, for checking us out this week. We certainly appreciate everything that you do for us. Thank you to everybody who comments on the show. Thank you, everybody who rates us over on Apple Podcasts. Thank you to everyone who is one of our patrons. Without you, we wouldn't be able to do this show. So until next time, that's all, folks.
The Legion Clubhouse is a production of Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC, and is produced by Steven Schleicher. Your hosts were Matthew Peterson and Steven Schleicher. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra and Steven at Major Spoilers. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Legion Clubhouse. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I'm Jason Inman. Until next time, eat it, Grandpa.
This podcast is copyright 2022 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.